This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Clemson football team wins the national championship just about a week ago, almost exactly 8 days ago, and they have already traveled to the White House to visit with the president and tour Washington, D.C. So that in and of itself is a quick turnaround. But due to the government shutdown, Donald Trump decided to buy all the fast food. And so he filled up the tables in the White House with Wendy's, with Burger King, with McDonald's, and also with some pizzas. And right before the Clemson team walked in, he met the media. There's an incredible photo with a picture of Abraham Lincoln in the background, looking out at the spread of fast food in the White House. And Donald Trump was asked about the spread, and he had this to say.
We have pizzas, we have 300 hamburgers, many, many French fries, all of our favorite foods. I want to see what's here when we leave. The reason we did this is because of the shutdown. We want to make sure that everything is great. So we sent out, we got this, and we have some wonderful people working at the White House. They helped us out with this.
That's good. Trump was asked what his favorite food was and everything else, or favorite fast food. He declined to pick between McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and all of those decisions. So my question that I'm asking, I think it's an interesting one. Can you just order food at the White House? Like if I'm sitting in the West Wing and it's 10 o'clock at night, and I went to college in Washington, D.C. So I have been there as a college kid, and you know the food is all shut down at the campus. You're really hungry. You want food. I don't know if they still exist. We used to order. They would deliver to GW, and I'm going back in time here. Anybody who lived in D.C. and was up late nights at all, there was a place called Manny and Olga's that would deliver 24 hours. They were phenomenal. They would deliver food all over the place, right? I can't even imagine how much money I have spent on Manny and Olga's over the years. You come back from the bar, it's 2 a.m., you're hungry with your buddies, and you're like, all right, we're going to get some Manny and Olga's, right? Like, we need a 24-hour place. I don't even know. Somebody Google that and see if that place is still alive. I just gave them the biggest plug they probably ever got on a national level. We used to order that food like crazy, and they would deliver all over GW. And obviously, even it was a little bit difficult, if you live in a dorm, getting food delivered to a dorm is not always that easy, right? Because you have to go through the security at the front of the dorm. They have to dial the right place. Like, it's not really that easy. Is Manny and Olga still there?
Yeah, it's still there.
Still thriving. I need to look. Do they have a website?
You can order something right now if you want, Clay. Yeah.
Do they have a website back in the day? That was like the other thing they had back in the day. We were ahead the early days of the internet. So I was in college from 97 to 2001. And this was like when everybody was convinced that you know, like everything was going to exist be immediately delivered. And back in the day, they had this company called Cosmo.com. Some of you may remember it if you were on the East Coast. I'm not sure how many different cities they had it in. But you could go on Cosmo.com and order anything, and they would deliver it. So, like, if you wanted to buy, let's say, like, I'm a huge Mountain Dew fan, right? Much to my wife's chagrin. And I have a lot of the same taste buds as the president, right? I like fast food, too. But if you wanted to get just, like, a 2-liter of Mountain Dew, they would deliver it to your dorm or to your apartment. Now, they ended up going bankrupt because they were ahead of the game. But they were basically trying to do what Amazon did before Amazon was as popular as they were. Cosmo just, they couldn't quite make money. They had the they also had the grocery that would go around. Like, D.C. was kind of the center of early internet commerce. But what my point is here, it's not easy to get things delivered necessarily when you live in an apartment building or you live in a business and you work there. So can you just order food to the White House? I have no idea. Is there some sort of security that's set up? I bet there is somebody listening to us right now who either works in the White House or has worked in the White House and can tell us. And the reason why I bring this up is for a while, and I don't know if this is still the rule, they were taking up cell phones in the West Wing of the White House because they were worried about security issues. So they wanted to make sure when you were in the West Wing of the White House that you weren't on your cell phone all the time, like tweeting out things from the West Wing. And so I actually got to go into the West Wing last spring and go eat in the West Wing. It was an awesome day. Really cool experience to get to tour in the West Wing. But like, if you wanted to get a pizza, can you just get it delivered there? If I wanted Manny and Olga's, which when I was in college, again, mannyandolgas.com, I'm pulling up the website right now. I loved that place. I'm glad that they still exist. If you live in D.C. and you ever ordered late night food, Manny and Olga's wings, subs, salads, heroes.
Oh, look at that chicken parm sandwich.
Oh, that's what I would always get. I would go straight with the chicken parm sandwich. They were phenomenal, and they were great. They may have multiple locations now, but back in the day, they didn't have very many of them, but they were always there. They were there all hours. So I'm opening up phone lines. What do you guys think? Let's go around the crew here. Do you think you can just order a pizza and they just deliver it to the White House and you can just eat it with like no security?
I'm guessing no, because I know if the president is going to go get some food somewhere, the place gets notified like 2 to 3 weeks in advance. So with those kind of safety precautions, I don't think they will just let outside food come in so easily like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. What about you, Eddie Garcia? What do you think? Do you think you can just order food and get it delivered to the White House?
Well, if you're the junior assistant to, you know, some schlub in the White House, no. But if you're the president, you get that's going to get done.
Oh, you think that the president, like if Trump just wants a pizza, like they can just bring a pizza? Does he have a taste tester? Do you think they have anybody who looks up? Like, that seems crazy to me that if you knew, okay, the president regularly orders pizzas, that some random dude can just be making the pizza. When you think about all the security and you think about like the King Joffrey situation that we had, spoiler alert, on Game of Thrones, like, and even back in the day, the king used to have a taste tester, right? Like somebody would eat his food before he did. Do you tell me that the president can just order a pizza and just like gets delivered and just takes a slice of pizza and starts eating it?
Well, I think, especially for this president, that they probably have to take special precautions. I mean, they always take precautions with the president, but you tell me Bill Clinton, when he was in the White House, didn't have somebody go get him fast food regularly?
But you think you could? That seems like a Homeland episode waiting to happen where you assassinate the president by just like getting in something on his hamburger. Right? I mean, am I the only person who thinks about, like, I can't believe, and that's what I was watching, all those hamburgers and all that stuff. I'm just thinking to myself, do they have somebody to vet the food? Because what if, like, some terrorist just decided, I know these hamburgers are all going to the White House.
Wouldn't the Secret Service have to taste it first?
Well, I don't know.
Dudes from there.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
well, maybe they would have to stand there. That's what I'm thinking.
Do they watch the preparation of like the hamburgers? Like they bring in 300 hamburgers. Like, am I the only person trying to protect the country and make sure that nobody gets killed from eating a hamburger?
No, I just think that long pause was all of us thinking about Pence being president.
By the way, I think also when we looked there, did they bring in the filet of fish? When they bought the 300 hamburgers, did they still make the filet of fish at McDonald's?
Yeah, they do.
What kind of sick bastard walks into McDonald's and orders a fish sandwich? The fact that the filet of fish still exists.
I've never had one.
You know what I did? We went on vacation a few years ago to Seattle, and we were driving. We went up to Vancouver, and we were driving. And if you ever made that drive from Seattle to Vancouver, you hit an area where there's hardly anything. And so we flew into Seattle. I thought this would be an easy drive to Vancouver. It turns into like a crazy trip, right? We got three kids. We got a rented van and everybody's hungry. And we finally see this Denny's. And we see this Denny's. And I went into a Denny's. And for some reason, I was trying to be healthy. You know what I ordered? Salmon. And it was the worst thing I've ever ordered in my life. And my wife was like, well, who goes to Denny's and order salmon? That was dumb of you to begin with, right? Like, why does Denny's even have salmon on the menu to make stupid people like me decide to order salmon? Why does McDonald's have filet of fish still on the
menu? Because during Lent season, Catholics go to McDonald's and buy fish fillets every
Friday.
Yeah,
well, okay, make it like the McRib that you bring back for a short period of time. The McRib is a fantastic sandwich. If you've ever had
the McRib. Oh, that's nasty. I didn't like it.
Oh, the McRib is phenomenal.
It's like rubber.
But that's like rubber.
I'm not saying it's not tasty. It's just, you know.
So I want, here's what I'm asking. Somebody in the White House who has worked there before to call right now and let me know about this. Are we safe or could everybody just get wiped out by the hamburger order? 877-996-6369. Dub, who should I go to first?
We got Cole in Louisville.
Probably not. I need somebody to call from the White House and let me know about this. Cole, what do you think?
Hey, I think we're underestimating the power of the Secret Service every time the president.
Secret Service just wiped out Cole. Yeah. Cole came in. He's about to give us some top secret info. And then he just got sniped. He just got a dart right to the neck. He's done. The Secret Service just took him out. That's unbelievable. I was like on pins and needles with what Cole was going to tell us. And then he just got darted out. He just got sniped right out. All right, who's up next?
We got Jose in Fremont.
Jose in Fremont, what do you think?
What's up, brother? Hey, a couple things real quick. Hey, I think that the Secret Service literally drops into somewhere unexpectedly and just watches from the process from scratch. And
so we have a Secret Service agent who watched the preparation of all 300 Big Macs?
I'm pretty sure they dropped in out of nowhere and you're like, hey, we need this, boom. And he's watching it from the get-go because they're not going to pre-announce it.
What is everybody getting sniped for? Jose's gone too.
Oh. Wow.
So,
all right, we got Mitchell on hold. He used to work at the White House.
Oh, I knew this would happen. Somebody in the White House. By the way, also, think about your bad break. If, you were really on a short break and you had to go get a Big Mac and you walk in and you're like, hey, I'd like a Big Mac. And they're like, sorry, we got to make 400 Big Macs right now for the White House. You would think you were getting pranked. All right, Mitchell used to work in the White House. Mitchell, is it possible to order food?
Yeah, so I think the thing that's being missed here is they don't have it ordered to the White House. They call up a random restaurant nearby and say they need, this much food, and then staff go out and get it. So it keeps it random.
Yeah. Okay, so I understand that if you have, a big order. But I'm saying if you're just a random dude, let's say you're working in the West Wing, and I was using as an example my guys at Manny and Olga's. We used to order, let's say it's 2 a.m., and you're just cranking away late night, and you're not the president who can just reach over and pick up the phone and be like, whatever food you want, it can be prepared because you have a full-time staff. Could I order a chicken parm sandwich from Manny and Olga's and have it delivered to the White House? Is Mitchell gone too?
Yeah.
This is
what is going on with our phones?
And I think they're being routed through Washington this morning.
Have we suddenly gotten taken over? All right, Craig is down in Orlando, and he also worked in the White House. Craig, you heard my hypothetical there. I went to school in D.C. It's 2 a.m. I'm working late, and I decide I want a chicken parm sandwich. It can get delivered by Manny and Olga's. But could I get that? Craig, you're with us. Could I get that delivered? By the way, it really is disappointing to me that a guy who used to work in the White House also can't just normally talk on the radio. We have so many bad callers who can't handle it. We got Craig calling in from the White House, and even he can't do it right. All right, Craig, so could I order a chicken parm sandwich to the White House?
Every single caller on hold just dropped in 1 second, just now.
I mean, are we legitimately under assault from the White House?
Something fishy. Speaking of fish fillets is going on.
Are they going to show up at my house now in our home studio here in Nashville? And am I going to go out in handcuffs because I'm trying to protect the country and figure out whether or not you can order a sandwich to the White House or pizza?
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We're joined now by Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. And Charles, you had the big game of divisional weekend, the only one that was really competitive. I thought you and Kevin Burkhardt and Peter Schrager, and I'm trying to remember the entire staff that you brought to bear. Pam Oliver, all did an incredible job on that game on Fox. Thanks. First of all, start here. How much fun was it?
It was a blast. It was an absolute blast because it's easy to say, of course, it's the divisional playoffs, it's the NFL. But then throw in the fact that it's New Orleans, number one seed, they get a chance to host. Those fans excited as always. You know what it's like there, Clay, for a Saints game. And now with the stakes being this high, plus the expectation that this could be another Super Bowl team. Yeah, that place was jumping in pregame. And, you cover a ton of college football, as do I. We both love college football. And I always hear the same argument, college football fans. It's not the same, that pro game. Those people, they don't, we get excited in the college game. The fans is more corporate. It didn't feel that way at all on Sunday in New Orleans. It felt just like any atmosphere you would ever have. And those fans were really into it.
What did you think of the start from the Eagles? At any point in time, did you think, oh, man, I'm always curious as you're calling a game, Eagles come out and get up 14-0. Did you think, oh, we got a real upset here, or did you kind of in the back of your mind always assume the Saints would still come back and find a way to win?
Well, it's kind of both, Clay, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not riding a fence on it. You have both thoughts run through your head because going in, very simply, it's very strange to talk about a defending Super Bowl champion as a team with nothing to lose, but that's really where the Eagles were. You know, even talking with Doug Peterson, I said, are you offended, you know, when someone talks about you're playing with house money because, you know, you guys just getting to the playoffs? He's like, no. And he said, we plan to call the game accordingly. In fact, during the season when I talked to him, you know, his book title was Fearless.
Yes.
Because of them going after things. I said, do you still call a game fearless? And he said, fearless-ish. He said, I'd never call a game just totally fearless because there's always other factors to consider. And then I asked him before this game, and he said, not much ish on this one. We can just let it all go for it. But they're up 14-0, and Kevin and I at that point did say, hey, don't forget, they're still dealing with the Saints at that offense. Don't get too comfortable too fast if you're Philadelphia at 14-0. Things can happen. And then the fake punt happened. And that started to change things for New Orleans.
You talked about an interesting decision that we debate a lot every year, it seems like, in the NFL. How much do you kind of take your foot off the gas once you know what your playoff fate is? And with that in mind, the Saints rested everybody in the final week of the regular season. They then had a bye week, and I thought it showed up early when they came out flat because the first pass of the game, Drew Brees has a touchdown underthrew his man. I mean, if he hits a touchdown pass there, probably the Eagles are like, oh, no, here we go again. And Brees later missed, I think it was Taysom Hill, wide open again if he had overthrown. He underthrew two guys that should have been touchdown passes. And certainly the Saints as a whole came out, I think it's fair to say, a little bit flat or a little bit unprepared or just maybe not a little bit fluid like they had been over the course of the season. Do you think that was a big factor, basically having effectively 3 weeks off between games?
Yeah, I think it's a normal factor. But I think just about every coach in the league is going to tell you, in most situations, rest of your star guys over rust. I think my colleague at NFL Network, Daniel Jeremiah, tweeted that out. You know, you're going to err on the side of having those guys ready to play as opposed to the other way. And the other part is, because of the roster size, as Sean Payton brings up a very good point, when you're resting people, you can only rest so many.
Right.
You know, it's not like a college game where you go, guess what, all 22 starters, offense, defense, go ahead and put your sweats on, guys, because we've got 60 other guys that can go today, and they'll play it out. In this case, you've got to be selective about it. Think about it this way. Which running back do you rest for the last game if you're New Orleans? You rested Ingram, you rest in Kamara. Well, because Ingram didn't play the first four games of the year and Kamara did and got extra touches, they rested Kamara, but Ingram played, you know, close to a half in the last game. You get the idea. So there was an element of it. I just think that first pass play was so normal for New Orleans because that their first 15 plays that they script, the openers, whatever you want to call them, they script to probe, they script to attack. And they decided to attack early because Ted Ginn didn't play in that first game. So they decided to show the speed. Let's get after them. Let's see if these DBs that we don't even know who they are can hold up. And as you said, underthrew it a little. LeBlanc makes a nice play on the ball. And the Eagles have life early. And off they went. But all in all, yeah, there's going to be some rust. But most teams are going to err on that side.
One of the most intriguing decisions, and we also saw it, and I'm sure you were watching, the Rams game against the Cowboys. I believe he was down 14-0 and faced a 4th-and-2, Sean Payton did. And most of the time, historically in the NFL, you kick a field goal there.
Yeah.
And Sean McVay faced a similar decision, I think up 8 with like 8 minutes to go or something. And most all the time in football, a coach would kick a field goal to go up 11 in that Cowboy Rams game. Sean McVay, I think you even said it as you're calling the game, most NFL coaches kick the field goal there to go make it get on the scoreboard, make it 14-3. Is that decision really kind of emblematic of the evolution we've seen in the way that offensive football is kind of predominating in the NFL? That Sean McVay would say, I'm sorry, that Sean Payton would say, no, we're not taking the guaranteed three. We're going for the touchdown here, even on 4th and 2.
It is, Clay. That's where we've evolved. And also go back on that series as they were down 14-0, and I'm keeping it with New Orleans right here, New Orleans and Philadelphia. Remember, down 14-0, they don't pick up a first down,
yes,
but there's a holding penalty. And Doug Peterson has the option of declining the holding penalty, make it 4th down, or take it and give Drew Brees another shot. And I don't know very many coaches are going to say, give Drew Brees another shot. Not in that part of the field. If they'd been out near midfield, I think he would have taken the penalty.
To knock him out of field goal range.
Right.
But it would have been,
right,
it was 3rd and 11 versus, like, you know, 4th and 1, basically.
And back on his own third, back on their own 30. So, okay, smart play. And something that I missed, and you know how it is after a game, Clay, you kick yourself over things you missed. I didn't say on air, Philadelphia didn't even have their regular punt return unit on the field.
Yes.
They had defense and played punt safe, what we call, look for the fake. And even so, Sean Payton runs the fake with Taysom Hill, picks it up. So to go back to your point about going for it on that 4th and 2, yes, it's a different era and a different age in terms of how a lot of guys are more aggressive. But I think Sean Payton said, if I faked it back here, I don't want to just go all the way downfield and settle for a field goal. I've got a play that I like. I'm going to run it here, and this is what my team believes in anyway. We stay aggressive. I think that's why he went. I think for Sean McVay, it was also, we just want to go ahead and throw the big shot at them now. And he also could feel pretty good about what Wade Phillips' defense was doing that day, couldn't he? So it was two different things. If I don't get it here, do I really believe Dallas is going to drive it 98, 99 yards on me? I feel like I'm going to be okay. Let's go ahead and get it done. So a couple of factors kicked in, I believe, for both coaches. And, you know, I said on air I'd kick the field goal, but this is Sean Payton. You know, it just shows the difference in things. And I've got to get along with 2018, 2019 myself. These guys are going to go get it.
We're talking to Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. You can reach out to him there. He called the Eagles and Saints game for Fox divisional round playoff. The drive in the third quarter, which basically took up the entirety of that game, I think it was 11 plays, longest playoff drive I saw a stat since 2007. 5 penalties on it, I think. They end up gaining like 125 yards. Calling that drive, did it feel like forever to you guys like it did watching it? I mean, to me, that was a championship drive. To me, that was the series that really defined this game.
It did, and it was a drive that, in the midst of it, we discussed, is that because you have a drive like this going, if ultimately it ends up in a field goal, it would feel like the biggest disappointment they've had in a long time. You can't drive it that long, control the game that long, and put yourself in bad spots as many times as they did on that drive. How many times did it feel like, you know, they pick up a first down on the next series, on the you know, the new set of downs, penalty against New Orleans, right? Now they're starting in a little bit of a hole. They dig out of the hole, pick up the first down, penalty New Orleans. I mean, it was the craziest thing going. They kept hurting themselves while they were helping themselves, and then it culminates, they get it done, and you look up, and the third quarter is essentially over. You're like, whoa, what just, you know, what happened here? But if that had ended with them kicking a field goal, Clay, that's a huge disappointment, even if they'd run the legs off of Philadelphia, and they did to an extent. But I give Philadelphia a ton of credit. Even after that, they kept hanging in there and battling, only gave up a field goal on one drive to make it 20-14. And then on the next drive, on that key third down, I believe it was Michael Bennett, made a great play on a run call by Sean Payton, because all he wanted to do was get in field goal position.
Yes. Yeah, they lost five. Yeah,
and lose 5 yards. And now from inside, it would have been a high 40s kick. It goes to a 52-yard kick, which is right on the line. The defensive coordinators say, we kind of concede 3 points with kickers today. And he ends up missing the field goal, and they're still in it. And Foles has a chance to come downfield. And look, if Jeffrey makes the catch, and I know there's been a lot of, why did they run the play before the 2-minute warning? But I don't spend as much time on that. I think a lot of people, to me, that was really overblown. Oh, they should have waited. And, you know, as look, that ball was right in his hands. I don't care what it said on the clock. If he catches that football, Clay, we don't have any discussion about them running the play before the two-minute warning, do we? Zero. Because if he catches the football, they got a first down. They're inside. They're at the two-minute warning, and everyone in that stadium can't breathe because Nick Foles is about to do it again. And instead, the ball goes through his hands. Lattimore gets the interception. And Lattimore was great in the second half on Jeffrey, his coverage. But on that play, it wasn't his coverage. It was Jeffrey letting the ball through his hands and Lattimore's quick hands picking it off, and there was your ball game.
We're talking to Charles Davis. Did you get a sense? You mentioned Nick Foles and what he has meant to the Eagles in the postseason, obviously winning the Super Bowl last year, winning a playoff game on the road against the Bears, and frankly, the Eagles in very good shape to potentially pull off a huge upset on the road against the Saints at the time where that ball was tipped and got picked off. What do the Eagles do now? Did you get a sense for what their likely move is going to be at all by talking with them? Is Carson Wentz still their quarterback of the future? Do they let Nick Foles go? What's kind of your read on that quarterback situation as they move into the offseason?
I think that if the Eagles had won on Sunday and got to the NFC Championship game, the discussion continues to rage inside the Eagles organization. And heaven forbid, or good fortune, they got to the Super Bowl, then the discussion's even more intense. But their plan, as we could glean it as best we could, and Doug Peterson told us in our production meeting, Carson Wentz is our future.
Yeah.
When we talked with Nick Foles in our time frame, Nick said, and he said some semblance of this the entire week, I just want to enjoy having another game in this Eagles jersey, and we'll see what goes after that. I think, you know, if it had been New Year's Eve, we would have been playing Auld Lang Syne. I think Nick Foles is headed somewhere else. But remember, he's under contract, so someone's got to trade for him. Okay, so and there will be a market for him, as you and I both know, and anyone who can hear our voices knows. There will be a market, and your favorite team is in a quarterback quandary. You're trying to figure out, is Nick Foles the guy we want to go get, and what will we trade for him, et cetera, et cetera. Because there's no way that the Eagles can go another year. Well, let me rephrase. They could go another year with the two of them. I don't think it's in either one of their best interests. Because Nick Foles is back fully engaged, Clay. You remember he had to be talked into playing again? He was about to retire. He's back fully engaged and wants a 16-game season to prove that it's not just Foles' magic at playoff time, that he is a legit starting full-scale quarterback of the NFL like he was that one season with Chip Kelly. He wants that again. Of course, Carson Wentz is like, are you kidding me? 2 years in a row I get hurt and my backup does magical things in the playoffs. I was going to be the league MVP 2 years ago. I can run this team. I think that they would handle it, but I don't think either one of them wants to handle it again, and I think the Eagles know that. One's got to stay, one's got to go. Wentz will likely stay, Foles will likely go.
What do you see happening in the NFC Championship game between the Rams and the Saints and then in the AFC between the Chiefs and the Patriots?
I'll start with the AFC, and the temperature is going to be brutal. But both teams are used to cold weather. Obviously, you get a little bit more in New England than Kansas City, but not appreciably more. It gets cold in Kansas City, and they just played one of those games in the snow, so they're not going to go in and go, oh, my God, look at this weather. What I see in it is this. Mahomes is going to be Mahomes. He's going to make those plays. But I feel like Sony Michel running the football is a big advantage for New England in this one now. And remember, I'm the dummy who picked the Chargers.
Yeah, join the club.
To beat the Patriots. So I'm not going to sit here and get revisionist on it and go, what'd I do again? Here come the Patriots. But Michelle running the football is a big, big deal. And I'm just really enjoying how Tom Brady has flipped the narrative that all of a sudden the whole world hates the Patriots and we're the biggest underdog you've ever seen. And you guys all think, what was his quote? You guys all think we suck.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's really good, Tom. I had to give him points for that. Bravo, bravo. So that's how I see that one going. I think the running back may be the difference in it, and Sony Michel over Damian Williams. If you flip it over to the NFC side, if we see those two defenses show up, and the Saints lost a big part that's not talked about yet but will be talked about in Sheldon Rankins. their defensive tackle. He is so good that he helps out Cam Jordan in pass rush by occupying people and getting home himself. He had 8 sacks during the season. That's a big loss because it changes their rotation. David Onyemata's got to be a full-time guy now. You flip it over to the other side, the Rams' defensive front actually played the run, didn't they? That was the biggest concern. They weren't just pass rushers. They played the run, held down Ezekiel Elliott. If we get that Rams' defensive front, they could go into New Orleans and get an upset because, to me, the Rams' offense is back in better sync now. Gurley, Anderson running the heck out of it, allows Goff better access throwing the football. They've already been to New Orleans. They know what the crowd's like. I think we've got 2 terrific games. All 4 can win it. But I want to see if we get those teams we saw in the semis, boy, oh boy, that's going to be fun, Clay.
Last question for you, Charles Davis. I'm not even sure if you've seen this news because it came out after midnight last night. T. Martin is headed back to Tennessee to be on the coaching staff. You are a Tennessee grad. By the way, did you have an orange and white striped tie on? I couldn't tell exactly what color.
It was red and white.
Yeah.
It was red and
you know
white.
What?
But believe me, I was thinking orange and white.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I asked my wife, we were watching. I was like, I can't tell exactly what color that is. I know it's a white and red or orange or whatever. What do you think about T. Martin going back to Knoxville?
I love the fact that he's coming back home. I do believe that T. Martin is a quality offensive coordinator, play caller. They really got a raw deal at USC in a lot of ways. I'm happy he's back on staff at Tennessee. I just think that for him, his level is offensive coordinator level, not just position coach level.
Yep.
But at this stage, he's coming back home to do that, and then someone's going, either Tennessee will benefit, you know, down the road where he may get elevated, or someone else is going to get that guy. But USC, That move that was made with him, he got scapegoated in my humble opinion. And you know, the head coach there, he's got to figure out what he's really doing because he already lost his offense coordinator to be the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals and not to figure it out going forward.
Yeah, it's a messy situation indeed. Charles, outstanding job on the NFL this season. Congrats. I didn't think it got enough attention how good you and your crew did and how big of an accomplishment it was to get to call that game. Look forward to talking to you down the road, my man.
Thanks a lot, Clay. You take care of yourself.
That's Charles Davis. He's the voice of Madden, as my kids always say every time they hear him calling a game at CFD22.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Kyler Murray declaring for the NFL draft. I think it was a smart move. I think it was the strategically intelligent decision. He stands to make 2 to 7 times as much guaranteed money if he's a first-round draft pick in the NFL as opposed to a first-round draft pick in Major League Baseball. If you listen to this show, you heard Mark Schlereth say that he thought even a 5'9 or 5'10 quarterback, given the way the game is played now, could succeed in the NFL. I think a team will take Kyler Murray in the first round. I think that he will then make a lot more money, whether he will be good or bad in the NFL. Probably going to be a function to a certain extent of what system he ends up in. I think he could be Russell Wilson. Having seen the way he can throw, having seen how big his arm is, having seen, I think you starting to pay attention to and maybe start to recognize the degree to which baseball guys are becoming really successful in the NFL at the quarterback position. And what do I mean by baseball guys? You notice how Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson can make throws at all sorts of different angles, in addition to the fact that they can be your prototypical drop-back passer, throw the ball down the field that you need to do in the NFL. When they are moving around in the pocket, they've got the ability to do the three-quarter arm throw, side arm throw, to adjust on the fly. Mahomes does it phenomenally well in the same way that a fielder would in a baseball game. You know how in an infield situation, baseball players have to regularly make throws from awkward angles in order to get the ball to first base to get an out? That, to me, a lot of times when I watch Patrick Mahomes, I think he's got a baseball arm delivery. Where, and look, they're not the first guys to do it, but where you can have that touch and that different velocity on every control and where you can deliver different arm angle throws, that's what I would like about Kyler Murray, is that when I watch him play, what I think he does well is find the angles to deliver the ball. Whether it's, look, a 50-yard throw down the field, a simple out route, or you're rolling out and you need to hit somebody and you got to be able to get around a linebacker or a defensive back who's got really good coverage, and the only way you can get it to your receiver is by dropping down and maybe doing a sidearm throw. I see Patrick Mahomes make a lot of those throws, and I think certainly Russell Wilson does as well. If I'm projecting on Kyler Murray, it's one of the things that I would like the most about his game. Now, figuring out whether or not a guy's going to be a success at the next level, unless you're Andrew Luck or potentially Trevor Lawrence, is really hard to do, even when they have all the skill sets. You know, is somebody going to be Blaine Gabbert? Or are they going to be Patrick Mahomes? You never know. You can have that statuesque quarterback who looks like he can make every throw, and then it just doesn't translate because Blaine Gabbert's not accurate enough, whereas Patrick Mahomes is insanely accurate. I think that's the difficulty in trying to project as you move forward. I've teased this a little bit ago. I want to hit it now. We didn't talk about it yesterday. I think most of the guys on the show have seen this because they either follow me on Twitter or they paid attention to it because I just told them as we were coming into break that I was going to talk about it. Did you guys see Michael Bennett confronting a cameraman leaving the field after the Saints-Eagles game? This is, I think, what I think happens all the time now in sports media is decisions are made about which stories will become stories based on clear agendas. And to me, this became readily apparent to me. It's a big part of my book, Republicans Buy Sneakers Too, of the way that you aren't treated honestly by the media is oftentimes when the decision is made, is this going to be a story or not? And we spent a lot of time on this show, one of the only shows in America that did it. When Michael Bennett falsely accused the Las Vegas Police Department of racism, and then they released 120 different cameras that proved that Michael Bennett had been lying, the story got almost no attention. Same thing has happened recently with Eric Reed, the safety of the Carolina Panthers. When he says that he's being unfairly treated based on the drug testing, that story is the lead story in every basically sports media outlet you can find. Oh my God, the NFL is discriminating against Eric Reed because he's kneeling for the national anthem. They are drug testing him much more than he deserves to be drug tested. And then when the NFL and the NFLPA, the Players Association that represents all NFL players, comes out and says, actually, we've reviewed the evidence. There's no mistreatment of Eric Reed at all. That story just dies. Almost nobody covers it. Michael Bennett says the Las Vegas police are racist. It's the lead story everywhere. Michael Bennett is proven to be a liar. Story isn't anywhere. LeBron James, somebody put a racial slur on my gate. Case never gets resolved. Video cameras don't reflect that it ever happened. Story just disappears. Nobody follows up on it, right? The media decides which stories to cover, and then if those stories die, they never get talked about anymore. Michael Bennett nominated for NFL Man of the Year. Did you see the end of the game against the Saints in the kneel down situation? He's diving at people trying to injure them. As he walks off the field, a cameraman is filming him on the field. That's literally why you make millions of dollars, so cameramen can film you walking on and off the field, doing everything on the football field. And Michael Bennett confronts the cameraman and threatens him for filming him. Does that become a story even though it's a video? No. Why not? Because the powers that be in the media have decided Michael Bennett's a good guy, even though we know he's a liar, even though we know he was arrested forcing his way past a paraplegic security guard in Houston to get onto the field, even though he's confronting a guy who's just on the field filming him as the game ends. Danny G, you watch this video. Michael Bennett, clearly the aggressor, clearly in the wrong here. The only place it's going to be mentioned in national media is by me. Why?
Well, I think you explained why. People don't like to focus on his negatives. Focus on the fact that he is a great player on the field, but obviously he's now a renowned idiot. He's one of the biggest jerks off the field, it seems like. I actually saw this on The Big Lead last night. Watch the video. And the writer, I think his name is Tully.
No idea, but yeah.
Yeah, says talk about biting the hand that feeds you. Here's a professional player whose career and livelihood depends almost completely on the fact that people are interested in watching football on TV, accosting the operator of a television camera who was recording Bennett while he was still on the field and in uniform. Yeah, come on, dude. You cannot do that. That would be like if we're at work, Clay, and you're having a bad show, but you happen to have like a CNN camera crew in the studio with you, and you just freak out on the camera guy. No, that couldn't happen.
I mean, I just think my goal on this show is to be as honest and straightforward and authentic with you guys for 3 hours every morning as I can be. You might not agree with every one of my opinions, but I'm not trying to present it to you in an unfair agenda. I talk about what I think the three or four biggest stories are every day. And you can agree or disagree with my decision about the stories, but I'm not running from stories like these. And I just think it's amazing in this day and age where some people get protected by the media like Michael Bennett has, and I don't get it. I don't get how him confronting a cameraman walking off the field after diving at a player's knees at the end of the New Orleans Saints game. This is a guy who's already got been arrested in Houston and has been proven to be a liar on the Las Vegas Police Department, and everybody continues to protect him. And I just don't get it. I think it's so wrong and unfair to protect a guy like this when the video is there. It should be out there. Like, Dub, did you watch this video?
Yes, I did see it.
Are you surprised this is not a major? Like, why isn't that video being aired on television?
I mean, I'm not necessarily surprised because it's happened in the past before where certain things, you know, get
because he gets
and chosen
protected.
What to cover. Yeah, it does seem like he does get protected, yeah.
Eddie Garcia, are you with me that Michael Bennett is getting protected here? That this is not a, like, that? Why is this story not a lead story on ESPN?
I don't know that it's a lead story.
I don't mean like that's number one story when you come out of, you know, like out of break. But I mean, it should be on their website,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, in our business, and when I say our business, I mean the sports media business. If you're in TV, good video is always going to be shown. And when I say good, I mean compelling video.
Somebody watches it and thinks they have an opinion on it.
Right,
when you say good, you mean like you show a video and somebody says, oh, I respond to that one way or the other.
Correct.
This is good video.
Correct. And I am surprised that I have not seen it, but I did see it online, and he looks like a major douche coming out the field and a guy just doing his job, filming players walking off the field.
By the way, we've been talking about Clemson and the hamburgers and security issues at the White House. You really need to go download the podcast. Donald Trump just tweeted, great being with the national champion Clemson Tigers last night at the White House. Because of the shutdown, I served them massive amounts of fast food. I paid for over 1,000 hamburgers. He misspelled hamburgers. Within 1 hour, it was all gone. Great guys and big eaters. Hamburgers is an amazing misspelling of hamburgers. I do still find it. And we're talking about security issues in the White House and how I think I could be an incredible asset to the Secret Service because I think about bad things that could happen before they actually happen to try to prevent them from happening. I can't believe that Donald Trump doesn't have a professional person just proofreading his tweets before he sends them out. Like, hamburgers being misspelled would be an easy fix, right? Like, I could have that job. I could be like, all right, you might want to correct the spelling of hamburgers here. It is good, by the way. I do think it's funny that Donald Trump buys however many hamburgers and french fries and pizzas and everything else and pays for it himself. And many people are ripping Donald Trump for serving fast food in the White House. I think most football players, if you gave them a choice between like fancy food in the White House or a Big Mac and Whoppers and, you know, singles with cheese from all those fast food restaurants and pizza, don't you think your average 18-year-old football player would prefer the fast food? I would have.
Yeah.
When I was 18, if you told me, hey, you can go into the White House and you can have a fancy linen tablecloth, like White House meal, which will be, you know, what will it be? It'll be like, you know, some kind of pasta dish, and it'll be some kind of like frou-frou chicken dish. Probably not going to get a steak, whatever. Or you can just have fast food. I would go fast food every time.
Yeah, if you see the video, I don't think any of the Clemson players are complaining because they have their plates piled high with burgers and pizza slices.
Yeah. I mean, and that's because I think your average college kid is like, at some point, I mean, you're talking to the guy who used to go to the gym, and then I would go straight from the gym to Wendy's. Like when I was in law school, the Vanderbilt gym that you would work out in, there's a Wendy's almost directly across the street from the gym. So I would go work out for like an hour, and then I would literally drive directly from the gym to the Wendy's and go through the drive-thru. And that's because that's why I worked out. So I loved Wendy's fast food, right? I still like fast food.
Baconator.
The Chick-fil-A, I think, restaurant, probably the greatest American restaurant right now. If you had to pick one restaurant to protect and you could, everybody else was going to shut down, I would say that Chick-fil-A would be my number one choice. If, and let's say that suddenly there was a mass attack, a shortage of fast food licenses, and they were only going to be able to keep one fast food restaurant alive forever, I would go Chick-fil-A. I don't even think that's a tough call. I'm protecting the Chick-fil-A.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
LeBron's groin seems to be a much bigger issue. Could be good for him. Much bigger issue than they let on initially. He's now been out for like, what, 2.5, 3 weeks. The Lakers are free-falling. Cue the music.
L.A. Bron.
I got.
From the first show in the country to predict hashtag future Laker. Instead of 3 hours of it, Clay Travis captures all the mania in 3 minutes.
LeBron has picked up the circus tent and it has followed him wherever he has gone. Right now, the Lakers have fallen out of the playoffs. They have been passed by the Utah Jazz. They are right now sitting at number 9 overall. They are 3-7 in their last 10. They have lost 2 in a row. They have played, for people out there who are like, well, it's still early. I mean, look, we're 44 games into an 82-game season. When is LeBron going to be back? How close to hitting the panic button should Laker fans be?
Well, historically, LeBron-led teams have always slumped in January. For whatever reason, January is the month LeBron takes off. He has nicks and scrapes, and he'll sit out for a week or two. In this case, maybe 3 weeks or longer. The Lakers do say that they are going to give us a report tomorrow about his return. He has been cleared to light practice. He's been running with the team, so that's good news. His workload on the court has been a little heavier in the past few days, so I feel like he'll be back on the court in about a week.
All right, that might be good because they should beat the Bulls, although who knows? They just lost to the Cavs at home, and they play against the Bulls here soon, maybe tonight. I think, right?
Yeah, Lakers host the Bulls at Staples tonight.
All right, but then they go on the road against the Rockets. They get the Warriors in L.A., and then they go on the road against the T-Wolves. Probably going to be an underdog, or maybe they're back home against the T-Wolves. Decent chance they're an underdog in at least 3 of those 4, maybe all 4 of those games. And then the 76ers are coming down, the Clippers. Like, the rest of the month of January is actually pretty tough. I think there's a decent chance they enter February and get close to the All-Star break, not in the playoffs. When you look at how this schedule is breaking down, even early in February, it's a really tough stretch. I think there's maybe time to hit the panic button, even when LeBron comes back, about where this team is going to project in the overall NBA playoffs. I don't know that a lot of people are paying attention to it yet, but we're over halfway through the season right now, and if the season ended today, the Lakers would not be in the playoff. So that's worth paying attention to.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.